There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 858, November 9th, 2020. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Chase Carey goes on a magic carpet ride. And Turkish Delight coming soon. Sunday. Now back to the Pasha of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Chase Elliott wins the NASCAR Cup finale. Max says he's fine. He's not frustrated. Vietnam out. Saudi Arabia in. We have more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com. And I just want to remind everybody once again that we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Anybody who donates $100 will receive an F1 Weekly coffee cup and sticker. Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, I'm doing very good. Thank you, sir. But I have to borrow a phrase from the song. Tell me more about Chase Elliott and the NASCAR Nation Grand Finale. What happened there?
It was exciting. It was fun. And it was raw. Yep, I turned it on right when it started. Great start. No crashing on the first corner. And then I went and took a bath, came back for the final six laps, and it was exciting. Keep up the good work. Chase Elliott, of course, we're talking the great Elliott family with Bill at the head of the family.
Yes, from Dawsonville, Georgia. When I came to the U.S. in 1985, Bill Elliott in his Ford, T-Bird, he was winning a lot of races, and I believe he was the first driver who he was known as a million-dollar Bill. Because they had three, you know, super speedway races. And there was a prize, I think, from R.J. Reynolds that if you win all three, you get $1 million. And he did that. So, from awesome Bill from Dawsonville, Georgia. So I'm so glad you have informed me on this because I miss this kind of action lately.
I understand. It's doing my duty to keep America informed of what's happening in the Bible Belt.
Okay. And main question is, was there any phantom caution?
There was a phantom caution and a competition caution.
Yeah. And I hope nobody stole the pace car during the playing of National Anthem.
Damn! But that was Daytona, brother!
Yes. Yes. So, well, you talk about Vietnam and Saudi Arabia. I have to say this, Mr. Rogers. Nothing like destination cities like Hanoi and Jeddah, or Jeddah as the natives call it. Another Arabian night on F1 calendar next season. This will be in November. It will be the second last race of the season. The Saudi oil company Aramco, which stands for Arabian American Oil Company, is already a serious commercial partner with F1. Now, this was very interesting. Some are calling for Lewis Hamilton to take a stand against the Grand Prix in Saudi Arabia. Amnesty International is not too thrilled about race going there. They are calling it in the media that Saudi Arabia is sports washing what they're doing there. Now, obviously, the high and mighty will be treated to the finest accommodation and hospitality that petrodollars can buy. It will be nice, in perfect world if politics was kept out of sports, but these are the times we are in. We all know car number 44 will win the inaugural Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. I just hope the winner does not take his shirt off to show his cross. That will be a serious rock the Casbah. Kerry don't like it. Do you like it, race in Saudi Arabia?
I don't think we have any business being in Saudi Arabia. But there's nothing I can do because the dollars flow freely down the rivers in Saudi Arabia. So I understand why Formula One wants to go there to collect payment. But my personal opinion, it's not that kind of a nation. They're not hip and happening.
Well, they're probably talking $40, $45 million. And many people and their leaders will turn their cheek the other way if the paymaster is doing some hanky-panky or, you know, like the famous saying, you know, Somoza may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch. So there you have it.
Wow, let me guess. Eisenhower.
There you go, sir. You are right on your history. I appreciate that. Oh, talking of Eisenhower and being in November, this is our only political joke of the podcast. I have a question for you, and I just hope you are not a one-term podcaster.
No, sir, but I break up my terms, just like, who was the president that came back and won a second term? I can't remember, but he was a funny guy. It escapes me, but it'll come up later on in the program.
Yeah, I think you're more like Chairman Mao. You started this long march in 2006 with Desiree and Steve Faub and David Tapia. And here you are, unchallenged. Anybody challenges your authority, they will be chop-chop. So what else would you like to talk about, Mr. Rogers?
Well, it's a beautiful world out there. There's a lot of activity, you know. Did you read about did you read the interview of Max Verstappen on F1.com?
No, sir, I have not. I've been really, really busy with work. And tell me what's going on, please.
He's not worried, but he is deep down. Let me put it this way. And people are forgetting how quickly time flies by. And if you listen to this podcast a lot, that helps time go by so fast. It's scary, so watch it on the podcast listening. But it's been 6 years that we've had Max. Max is in his sixth season. 2021 will be his seventh season.
And how old is he?
He's 23.
Wow.
I know. So he's young, but he's not having the luck that you need. I mean, he's going on his seventh year. I mean, that's bringing up ugliness. And how many podiums can you get until you become a champion? You could get millions, but if it's not the top step, I don't know what to do. But yes, he's been in the business for a long time. They're calling him a veteran with lots of maturity, seeking that world championship. But yes, people forget, Max has been with us for a long time. He's becoming an old man of the sea.
Yeah, you know, these days, luck in Formula One is spelled starting with M, as in Mercedes. And if you don't have that package, you are basically garbage. But I did read a comment from him that, and I have to, anybody will agree with him, that 90% of the grid will win in the Mercedes car.
I know, and I didn't want to repeat that because I think, once again, a lot of drivers are saying that. Especially the young ones. All the young drivers, you know, they're saying, oh man, just give me a chance in that car. I can do it. I could be a contender.
Now the question is, does Valtteri Bottas agree with this?
Well, Lewis Hamilton came out and said that Valtteri is not getting the credit that he deserves, Nasser.
Yes, and what is the credit that he deserves?
A gold number two.
Yeah, that's a tough one for him, man. And the way things are going, I heard a comment from Binotto that their new power unit is very, you know, it's looking good. But looking good and going good are two different things. I think we're looking at what? What are we looking at? next year. 105 Grand Prix wins and 110 pole positions for Lewis Hamilton.
Just a lucky guy.
Yes, sir. Now, talking of lucky guy, now there are these reports that Lewis may retire at the end of this season. Are you buying that?
No, but it's a simple way for people to start thinking, oh, that wouldn't be good for Formula One, for England, and we need Lewis to hang out for a little while.
Yeah, which I think he will. But they really need to bring in some. Maybe, you know what they should do is replace Bottas with, obviously, Max. They're not going to bring in Max, but maybe bring in George Russell. Let's put it on the table. Let's see. Maybe George will do to him what Lewis did to Alonso. We don't know. The only way we will find out if the young man is given the opportunity. So that would be a way to go. Otherwise, it's just business as usual.
Absolutely. I mean, Alonso heaped some praise over to George, but that's not going to get him a ride in a Mercedes.
Yes. Okay, sir, moving on, heaping praise, Mr. Grosjean, Romain Grosjean, is going sleepless in Geneve. After getting the boot from Haas F1, he is looking for racing anywhere from high voltage FE, Formula E, to Indy cars. He is elated there are very few ovals on the calendar. He recently tested for Mahindra Racing in Formula E. And talking of George Russell, he said that George Russell was the only driver who sent him a message on Romain Grosjean losing his seat, saying, "I'm sorry, so sorry.
I'm sorry, so sorry."
Romain Grosjean, was he expecting a text message from Kimi Raikkonen that I'm sorry to see you go?
Well, Romain, you know, he's Swiss-French. So that's a very sensitive part of Switzerland. A lot of tears and crying there. A lot of hugging.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, I followed his career from his early, you know, I used to be a big fan of his, and also Nico Hülkenberg, and it's just one of those things how these young kids did not get into the right car at the right time. And in the case of Romain Grosjean, he had the immense pleasure of being teammate to Alonso once upon a time, and that should do it for most people. Correcto?
Sometimes inspires people to go on and move on to greater and more exciting things.
Yeah, but that only happens if they're rookie against Fernando.
Oh, the lucky.
And their name is not Alex Jung.
Yo comprendo, sí. Gracias, muchacho.
Yes, sir. Are you? Man, I'm really excited about Renault going Alpine and Machismo Man coming there. It will be, again, we don't wish ill will on anybody, but I will be looking at how Esteban Ocon will rise up to the occasion of saying hola amigo at Alpine against Fernando Alonso. Are you giving, Fernando is in his early 40s, right?
He's 40 right now.
Okay, so he is in his 40s. Do you think Ocon has any chance?
Well, I mean, if you look at things logically, in a normal way, without throwing in legendary skills of some sort, he should have a terrific chance. He has youth and vigor. His virile sense should propel him ahead of Fernando, the old man of the sea. Who knows what will happen? But I don't know. But Fernando is going to be rusty. He's going to be cranky. You know how he is when he doesn't get those championships. And moody. So you want to be nice to him. But Ocon should feel good. He's got youth. He's got experience at the recent team. So he has the avantage, whether he takes that and runs with it, or we see the tail tuck under, is another story.
Yes, sir. That's a very, very tough going for a young driver. That season against Alonso will really make or break his deal with Mercedes if he will ever go into the Mercedes team to replace Lewis or Valtteri Bottas. It's a very, very big ask, I have to say.
You know, if Mercedes had a really good sense of humor, they should put Kimi Raikkonen in the second car, throw Bottas over to Alfa Romeo, and give Raikkonen a few laughs.
Yeah, but Raikkonen, you know, really did not live up to expectations against Sebastian and also Fernando. So I mean, he'll be very quick and competitive, no question about it. But will he rattle the cage of Lewis Hamilton? I don't think so.
The way he would handle that, we wouldn't get the sparks and the moodiness and the funky. Sorry, I'm entertaining myself now, Nasser.
Yeah, I think you're doing a pretty good job. Yes, and talking of cage rattling, a cage that is definitely being rattled right now is that of Daniel Kvyat by Dr. Marco, and JV has gone ballistic on Alexander Albon. Did you read his comments, Jacques Villeneuve's comments on Alexander Albon?
I did. Jacques Villeneuve is a nut job.
Not too long ago, he was advised he cannot come into the motorhome, Williams motorhome. I think he might be asked the same thing, not to come to Red Bull motorhome. He said he's there only because of the Thai backers, you know, Dietrich Mateschitz's Thai business partner. That's not very cool of JV, but, you know, the man has the right to his opinion and to express it, so we don't have a problem there. But, there's just too much media pressure on Albon right now. They keep saying they will give him till the end of the season. But the real question is, if rumor mill is to be believed, he will be replaced by Hulkenberg or Sergio Perez. But we shall find out. Between the three, who would you like to see in second seat?
Hulkenberg. I want to see Hulkenberg get one more shot at it. And Hulkenberg wants to be challenged, really. In a good car, Hulkenberg can be pretty impressive. I think he still has the certain je ne sais quoi. I want Hulkenberg.
Yeah, he is very quick. And again, like I said, followed his career from the early days. But, you know, even this, just to show you how quick Max is, Red Bulls said, they were reported as Dr. Marco saying, we need somebody who can get close to Max. You know, close to Max is like being within 3/10. And Hulkenberg thinks he can do that. So with all his experience, I'm sure he knows how quick Max is. He's not saying I'm going to match him or beat him, but he's saying he can come up to the acceptable level, which is still behind Max Verstappen. So, but it will be interesting. It will be it's one of those things, you know. What we're seeing is our opinion, what we think, what we feel. Who knows? Max may get his cage rattled by Hulkenberg, but I seriously doubt that. The reason I say this, he was teammate to Esteban Gutierrez, and he completely destroyed Esteban. And then when he was teammate to Sergio Perez, Sergio Perez was the guy who got podiums for Force India, not Nico Hulkenberg. Know what I'm saying?
I understand, but once again, you know, we're talking very few podiums. There's some luck involved. I don't get me wrong. I think Sergio Perez is very, very good. And I just want to see Hulkenberg get one more shot at it. That's all. It's just a simple feeling. Feelings.
Okay, Morris Albert. You know, it's interesting. If you compare the junior Formula career of Sergio Perez, Nico Hulkenberg, Nico won anything and everything, including GP2 in his first year. And I don't think that Sergio Perez ever won a championship in Europe, because he used to race in Formula BMW Germany and as a very young kid. And then he raced against in GP2 for 3 years, I think. And he came second, and the guy who beat him was Pastor Maldonado. So he has raced in some serious company. But I have to say that he had really dedicated himself to his profession, kind of like Graham Hill. You know, like one ex-F1 driver said to me, Graham Hill was a perfect example that even if you don't have the best skills in Formula One or God-given talent, you can still apply yourself and become a world champion, in his case, world champion, Le Mans champion, and Indy 500 champion. So I have a lot of respect for Sergio from that point of view.
And I think there's still a lot of life in him. I mean, look at the career that Takuma Sato is having in America.
Yeah, but it's a totally different depth of competition here. And what really also helps in America, IndyCar racing, is you don't have to build your own car. So everybody has a Dallara, which is very good for racing and for racing fans. And also for racing drivers, you know, if you have a pretty decent competitive ride, you can show your mettle. And a lot of these guys, young guys, you know, over the years, Ryan Hunter Ray, Elio Castroneves, and Cristiano D'Amato, you know, they started with small teams and did very well. So, yeah, you can have a very good lucrative career. I mean, just look at Alexander Zanardi, even Montoya. I mean, how popular Montoya is even today.
Yeah, I'm just saying that Perez's career is certainly not over. He does know Carlos, Mr. Slim, I should say. So he'll find something somewhere, even if it's not in F1. I mean, I like watching IndyCar, especially now that they're really focusing on road courses. So there's plenty of life in all these old fogies.
Yes, and you know, Daniel Kvyat, I think he's going to get torpedoed by Dr. Marko, because this Japanese kid, Yuki Tsunoda, is going to take part in the Young Driver Test. And he was supposed to do a race to get more points for the F1 Super License. I think in a series called Euro, Formula Open Euro. It used to, basically a fancy name for what used to be Spanish F3. And Dr. Marko put a kibosh on that, saying that you need to focus on F1 preparation. So most likely this kid will replace Daniel Kvyat at Toro Rosso, AlphaTauri as they are now called. Question is, are you going to miss Daniel Kvyat?
Ask me if I miss Petrov.
Okay. Well, for me, the defining moment for Kvyat would be in the green room, Sebastian Vettel. You came to me like a torpedo. That was beautiful. And Kvyat goes, that's racing. So, interesting. Any other driver you would like to discuss, sir, this evening?
Not necessarily, except for Fernando coming back next year is going to be fun and exciting, and it's going to break it up a little bit. I mean, you know, we're all hoping Max could whip some Lewis butt, and that'd be great. But, you know, as a sideshow, that's not happening. Lewis is going to get more championships. So in the meantime, let's see this new Alpine Renault do something good. And on top of everything else, this new team has Fernando Alonso as el numero uno. So there's a lot of excitement surrounding that team. It's going to be exciting. Alpine, Fernando, and Machismo. Oh my God, just the camping chairs alone are going to be fun.
How many teams has he driven for in Formula One now?
I'm not the encyclopedia, Nash. You are.
Well, he was with Minardi, then Renault, and then, of course, 2007, need I say more, back to Renault, Ferrari. It was a shame that he did not win a championship with Ferrari. But I do know he won his very first race with Ferrari. Do you remember that, sir?
Very exciting. And not only that, but in 2007, he won some very, very good races. 2007 was exciting, and we need more 2007. But unfortunately, everybody's scared.
And that is very true. That was an incredible season. Yeah, his win in Malaysia, which was his second race with McLaren, was fantastic. I think he's going to have podiums next year.
Absolutely. I think so, too. I think the package is going to be absolutely outstanding. They're going to nail it. People are going to be mad, especially this one guy. And his initials are CH. And I'm not talking about sugar. It's going to be fun to watch. But while we're excited and pumped up about Fernando, let's hear from Gary Sloan.
Hello, my name's Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So Dr. Helmut Marko and Christian Horner are always quoted as saying Red Bull owner Mr. Maastricht will make the final decisions on all the important issues. So let's have a look at his entry. First in item is Honda's departure from Formula One. Red Bull has stated their preferred option would be to take over Honda's engine from 2020 onwards, but the rules would have to be frozen to make it affordable. Christian Horner told Sky Sports, "The more we look, there really only is one option that works, and that would be to try and agree something with Honda where we could take on the IP for the Honda engine, but of course that would have to be dependent upon the regulations. It would only make sense for an independent engine supplier, as Red Bull would effectively be if there was a freeze. It would just be impossible to fund the kind of development spend that currently goes on with these engines. Horner added that it would be criminal to see the Honda engines otherwise left languishing on a shelf somewhere in a Japanese warehouse. So step forward Renault and Ferrari, who have expressed their opposition to a freeze of Formula One's engine regulations, with Renault saying, "I'm against freezing the engines. We have no intention to stop what could be a very important platform for us. We do not accept it." This will annoy Matatish, as this leaves him with the prospect of writing a very large cheque to continue with the Honda engines. Next in the in-tray is the problem with Verstappen. That's Joss, not Max. Joss no doubt is irritating him with his ongoing comments. First we had Joss wading in when he told De Telegraaf that it is high time that Red Bull deliver a car his lad can go to war amid the sudden uncertain future. A lot has been said by a lot of people outside of Red Bull. But that has no value to us. It's time for Red Bull to produce a championship-winning car. Then he plunged in on the driver debate, saying that if he was running Red Bull, Nico Hülkenberg would replace Alex Albon and become his son Max's teammate in 2021. Telling Maastricht he needs to produce a championship-winning car and which driver to employ is exactly the kind of interference that is bound to raise his blood pressure. Maastricht faces the possibility Max may jump ship. The prospect of this becomes more of a reality if Lewis decides his time in Formula One is up, something he has ruminated on recently, and Max gets the prize Mercedes seat. Massatic must know if Lewis shocks Formula One and hangs his helmet up after winning his seventh title, aka Nico Rosberg style, then Max is gone, breaking his contract in the process. It's not any less of a headache for Massatic when it comes to Albon. Both Marco and Horner have been uncharacteristically supportive of the Albon, with Marco telling German language motorsport total.com, "We'll give him some more time. Albon has until the last race in Abu Dhabi to prove himself, and then we will make an internal decision about whether he can stay or whether we are looking for someone from outside." This has left the paddock confused, but it may well be that Maastricht is in a private battle of wills with his long-term Red Bull Thai business partner, Chalo Yudijin, who is most likely backing British-born Thai driver Albon. Is Yudavidin playing hardball with Maastricht, adding to his stress levels? Next in the entry is HR issues, with Marco failing to complete his working as a team member course. He must have got under Horner's skin after the Honda announcement when he told Speedweek, "We work in all directions because we knew about Honda's decision for a long time. Mr. Horner is a team principal, not involved in strategic matters. Mr. Maastricht and I have known for a long time." He's also undermined Horner when he contradicted him over whether there was a performance clause in Verstappen's contract. Horner says no, Marco says yes. Then there's the looming threat that design guru Adrian Newey will jump ship and head to Aston Martin, leaving Maastricht with another headache. So with the loss of his engine supplier, the risk of losing his star driver and aggro from all corners, no doubt he will with his $26.9 billion fortune decamp to his private Fiji island, complete with its $1.7 million submarine to ponder his next move. Part of the decision-making process will be, does the Red Bull team give him enough bang for his bucks, or has the sponsorship run its course? He may well decide it would be better to allocate the money to his extensive portfolio of Red Bull sports teams and his extensive network of athletes which he financially supports. This covers a wide range, including MotoGP, rally, football clubs, ice hockey, sailing, etc, etc, etc. The Red Bull checkbook also comes out to host a myriad of events, from the cliff diving to the soapbox races. So he's not short of opportunities to spend the marketing dollar on. So has Maastricht had enough? And will he decide to sell? Well, he knows a thing or two about making a deal and will realise to obtain a premium price for Red Bull, he has to hold back on selling the Scuderia AlphaTauri team at the same time, so the sale is not perceived as a fire sale. The suitor with the deepest pockets and probably the greatest desire is Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund. The Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has big F1 ambitions, witnessed by their global sponsorship of F1 through state-owned oil giant Saudi Aramco and the arrival of the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix for the first time next year with a night race on the streets of the country's second city, Jeddah. The icing on the cake would be the formation of the Saudi Aramco Formula One team. With the sale complete, the Red Bull Driver Academy will be wound up and Marco will, in a role reversal, be on the receiving end of bad news regarding his employment, with Mysrick no doubt assuring him it's nothing personal, it's business. Next week we'll have a look at the AlphaTauri situation. Till then, more details at inthepitlane.com. Stay safe, stay well.
Thanks a lot, Gary. Once again, outstanding work. NAS, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this brief message.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rogers, no Formula 1 means no Formula 2, no Formula 3. But talking of these series, the Formula 1 management has made some changes, and it's all in the name of cost containment and bringing down the cost. You know, GP2 some years ago had gone up to like $2.5 million with top teams. Function of demand and supply. But we are in different times now. So what they're going to do next season is, you know, right now they both run on same weekend as Formula 1. So they're going to have one weekend Formula 2 races, next weekend Formula 3 races with a Formula 1 race. And this way it will cut down travel for the team, and that will be achieved by doing, instead of two races per weekend, there will be three races, which I really like, because nothing better than watching three Formula 2 races and a Formula 1 race on a weekend. So we'll see how it works out, and they really need to bring the cost of these series down so we can have more talent coming into racing than Trustafarians. What say you?
No, I totally agree. We've watched for years how all these series are always trying to bring the cost down. And it's still, $1 million gets you very little once you get to Formula 2. But it's great. Bringing costs down is great, except for one person. Lewis Hamilton is not that happy about the driver salary cap.
Gee, I thought he was feeling for all the people who are unemployed.
Remember that? Feelings. Well, apparently that $30 million cap, he talked to his shop steward and his union rep, and they're adamant, you know, he's got to get a union wage, and that's $40
million. Yeah. I don't remember the name of the, I think it was a famous football player or a basketball player. I don't know. He had a several yes. million dollar contract. Yep. Okay, anyway, this person was interviewed on national television, and his famous comment was, a few million dollars was not enough for him. He said, I have a family to feed. And Lewis, you know, 30 million is not enough. He's got a family, you know, he's got Roscoe and Bosco. You know, it's interesting, him taking his dog around. I wonder how much that costs. You know, I'll tell you about cost of racing, man. I was watching this video cast or whatever you want to call it with Damon Hill and the issue of how much it costs to go racing. And Damon Hill said, and you can feel it that this guy is very serious about how he feels about this thing. He said, you know, his son Josh used to race and he did not even make it to, I think, British Formula 3. I think he dropped out after Formula Renault, UK. And Damon Hill said that, you know, I could have put several kids through college for the money that I spent on my kid. And this kid was not even in European Formula 3 or Formula 2. So it's really, you know, something needs to be done to bring these costs down. Though maybe then, you know, Lance Stroll can buy a Formula 3 and hire some serious young talent. But you know, this is how it's going to be. Money will rule the world. It always has. So we can just have our, what we call, somebody used to say, pipe dreams. Okay, sir, now we did have some action, but I have not seen this, Mr. Rogers. So I need to get update on my motorsports fix. MotoGP from Valencia in Viva, España. Joan Mir took his first ever win in MotoGP and is now aiming for the championship. So that's very interesting. I think all these riders who are winning this year, they should thank Marc Marquez for not being in the championship this year. Okay, his Suzuki teammate Alex Rins was second, first 1-2 since 1982 for Suzuki. Now, I don't know how much you watch MotoGP, but once upon a time, I remember Suzuki, they were sponsored by Rizla in much like Mile 7 beautiful blue colors. And Chris Vermeulen from Australia was one of the riders, and I saw him race at Laguna Seca. Did you ever go to any of the MotoGP races at Laguna Seca, sir?
I did, because I was invited, because, you know, of how famous I am in this Bay Area of ours. But yes, the Rizla rolling papers, it doesn't get better than that.
Yes, sir. They had sponsored, shadow cars in Formula One also.
Bravo.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, now, I don't know if Yamaha hired some engineers from Ferrari. But in MotoGP, but they have been docked 50 constructors' points on past Thursday, after an FIM investigation found the Japanese mark had unsealed some of its engines without agreement from the Manufacturers Association and fitted non-homologated valves for the Spanish Grand Prix in July. Yamaha insists the valves it used were not of a different design to those it has homologated pre-season, and that this infringement was an internal oversight. I love these internal oversight, innocent mistake. Remember how a second fuel tank appeared in the Bar Honda once upon a time?
Yeah, that was exciting, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, and I remember Nick Frye was the guy, right?
Yep.
Team principal, he was at the FIA hearing. Oh my God, how sweet and innocent he was. He had no idea about it.
It happens to the best of them. I mean, Toyota in the World Rally Championship.
Of course. Yeah, and guy makes a pit stop on lap 12 of a 70-lap race, and next lap his teammate crashes into the wall, and he had no idea this was going to happen. Do you remember this incident, Mr. Rogers?
Yes, but I agree. He was totally innocent, an innocent victim of foul play.
Yes, of course. Okay, now check this out. Yamaha riders Morbidelli, Fabio Quartararo, and Maverick Vinales are on the Nando Singapore program. I don't know what was on, let's say, behind the pitfall. All denied they knew that Spanish Grand Prix engines were illegal, and Marquez's brother, who rides for Honda, he is not buying their story. But who knows what the truth is. And did I talk about the financial situation with Liberty Media? Apparently not. Did I, sir?
Not enough. How they're in the red?
Yes, in Q3. Liberty Media, they gave their results for the third quarter of 2020, showing an overall loss of $104 million for the period. Revenue fell by $36 million versus the same period last year, okay? And the biggest impact was felt in Q2 when revenues of just $24 million were recorded, as there were no events during this time. So we'll see how it goes, you know, but I'm sure in due course of time, when we will have 22, 23 races, that they will make a lot of money. It's amazing, you know. Chase Carey could not get a race in Miami, Florida, but he could get a race in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. What does that tell you, Mr. Rogers?
Money rules the world.
Absolutely. Now, I want to get your opinion on this. David Coulthard has called Seb a spent force, and he said, and I quote, "He was a four-time world champion, but that's in the past, And this is very much about the now and the future. And that's what DC said to me about when I asked him about what happened at McLaren. So DC is not looking back. He's looking forward.
I see that. Forward into the microphone.
You agree with DC that Seb is a spent force?
I do. Now, while we're talking about Seb, have you seen some of the concept drawings about the new Force, not Force India, I'm sorry, Aston Martin?
Are you talking about the green livery?
Correct.
Yes, I have seen some renditions, and I like it very much.
I don't like it. It reminds me of Mountain Dew. Now, if Mountain Dew is the sponsor, I think it's going to be terrific. But if that's supposed to be British Racing Green, or excuse me, BRG, that is no BRG green. Take it out!
No, what I saw was very good, and we don't have any green racing cars these days. So I'm looking forward to it. And I don't agree that, I may be wrong, not for the first time, but right now I don't buy that Sebastian Vettel is a spent force. He definitely will be spent force if his teammate is Max Verstappen. But I think he should be able to overhaul Lance Stroll without much issues.
Well, if he doesn't overhaul Lance Stroll, Papa's going to go up to Vettel and say, you know what? I'm getting a brand new bag.
Yes, that will be very, very... I mean, if he cannot even overhaul Lance Stroll, then he will be definitely spent force. And you know, in this day and age, nobody gives you full season. People are very quick to make a judgment call after three races. And you know, I have to say this to you. When Charles Leclerc came into Formula One with Sauber, I remember even I made a comment that, you know, maybe he's not the real deal, because in the after first three races, there was no machismo-ness from him. And this is a fact that Frederick Vasseur also brought up in a press conference, that everybody was saying, you know, he doesn't belong in Formula One after three or four races. So sometimes you just have to give people a little bit more time and opportunity to make an impact. Not everybody is Clint Eastwood, where they can go on a sudden impact. You know what I'm saying, Rogers?
I do understand what you're saying, and I understand sudden impact, and I understand vanishing point. But in this community, we don't have to be so sensitivity. I say, kill them all, and the laughter will be, they'll fire Vettel, and who are they going to call? Nico Hülkenberg.
Yeah, that will be something.
You got to admit, if Nico doesn't get a drive at Red Bull, he'll be back on call for the pink team that's going to be green and black and pink. I think it's going to be fascinating, but Vettel better perform or else.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm sure Lawrence Stroll is paying him a pretty penny and a pretty Canadian dollar, so he will have to make it happen. Otherwise, chop chop!
And we do love the chop chop.
Yes, we love cage rattling. That's what we love in Formula One, sir.
Real quickly, who wins in Istanbul?
Man, I'm going to tell you something. I have never seen such flames, Dante's Inferno, as I see in Valtteri Bottas' eyes. I think he's going into that first corner, which looks like Interlagos. He's going on the inside of Lewis, he's grabbing the lead, and on turn 8, he is just going to say, Das Vidania to Lewis Hamilton.
Are you sure you're not getting Trump's eyes mixed up with Bottas's eyes?
Oh, no. Maybe Melania's eyes, but not Donald Trump's eyes. But I'm going to tell you something. You didn't let me finish. So he's going to run away. But then Lewis will call his team and say, Bottas pitted, don't call me in. I'm going another 15 laps. And then Bottas will say, what do I do now? You know what I'm saying? He may go for some very strong Turkish coffee and just say, you know, this is my fate. And it's pretty sad, man. It will be nice if he can do a Nico Rosberg on Lewis Hamilton. Obviously, it's not going to happen this year, but... Wouldn't it be something? Can you imagine how much the media will jump on if Bottas wins the first four races and then going two races to go, he has a 48-point lead. And they're going, oh, Lewis is washed out. Lewis is finished. And I'm sure, you know, that's what some people would want. But we want races to be decided on the racetrack, not in the boardrooms and stewards' room, that's for sure.
Well, I think sometimes Lewis Hamilton and Toto are very coy. They're very funny guys, but they're very coy. They're very sneaky. And I think Bottas should get on the horn right away. As soon as he takes a lead, he should say, okay, I'll tell you when I pit. Make sure you pit LCH first. Bravo.
You know what Lewis Hamilton can do very well? Maybe he has already done this. Toto Wolff is a young man who is extremely successful, and he's not a trustafarian. And I think with him investing in Aston Martin company, and that is Toto Wolff, I think he will be very well advised to have Toto as his sort of a business advisor to him. Do you remember when he first came into Formula One? His father is from Trinidad, right? If I'm not mistaken, originally. He bought a big piece of land in Trinidad. So I think, you know, with Toto, he can make some very good investments and not end up like MC Hammer, you know, living in a $7 million house in Fremont Hills in California. And next thing you know, he's praising the Lord in a shopping mall to make a living. Yeah, because if Lewis takes advice, financial business advice from Toto Wolff, then he can go on the MC Hammer program and go, can't touch this.
I told you, homeboy. Can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, can't touch this. Look at my eyes, man. You can't touch this. Yo, let me bust the funky lyrics. Touch this. Fresh new kicks and bands. You got it like that. Now you know you wanna dance. So move out of your seat and get a fire girl and catch this beat while it's rolling. Hold on, bump a little bit and let them know it's going on like that. Like that. Pull on a mission, don't fall on back. Let them know that you're too much. And this is a beat they can't touch.
Positive vibration, man. Positive. Keep up the good work, Nass. I like it. Can't touch us. One of my favorite songs of all time. And Who Let the Dogs Out? We can't forget that one.
And what about Tone Loc from Oakland, California, home of The Rock?
Yes.
Remember that guy?
He's my buddy.
Oh, yeah, he was very good. Okay, you haven't said who you think will win the Turkish Grand Prix.
Well, I know who's going to win the Turkish Grand Prix, Nasser.
You do? Fernando?
That'll be next year. Fernando is still, but he'll be at the track having a Turkish delight and a camping chair. But no, the winner will be Albon.
There you go. There you go. Finally, somebody who is on. Maybe that's because of all that. What was your favorite meal at the Thai Ban?
L10.
L10. Yes, sir. Have you been to that place lately?
No, Nasser. It's just the way it is. The repo man has confiscated my car. So now it's just me and my poussette.
Oh, you know, I got an email from my boss, my employer. And they said, because they want this thing standardized all across the globe with the company, that we are not coming back to the office till July. And so much you can stay indoor in Tampa, Florida. So, you know, I'm spending some time here. And I'm seriously thinking of maybe, you know, hang out with my friend Jimbo. You've met Jimbo in Santa Cruz, right?
Jimbo Fisher, great coach. Love him.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of maybe flying, not right away, but maybe flying out to California for a month or two and, you know, working from home, so it doesn't matter where you work. If I'm there, we'll definitely do the Thai Ban and our favorite omelet with side order of jalapeno at Flames.
And I'll finally get my Ferrari sunglasses.
Oh yes, they are somewhere in that area.
Bravo. Anything else, Nas?
No, sir, I thank you for your cooperation, and we want to thank all our listeners. Wish everybody stay safe and happiness.
Thank you, Nasser. I'd like to thank everybody who listens. I'll see you at the hot dog stand.
Bye-bye. Thank you.